Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
What's in the news today?
With so many stories,
dozens of stories,
we're bound to miss a few.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
It's In Case We Missed It with the Killer Bees.
And here's the stuff you missed.
These stories we've been dying to get to, but the ghost of Brendan Riley didn't allow us to get to these earlier in the week. Yeah, he's still influencing our show. The ghost of Brendan Riley lives on. Not Santa says, don't blame Brendan Riley. You fired him. He had nothing to do with you not getting this week's In Case You Missed It. We didn't fire Brendan.
We did not.
That was just a joke. That was a joke. We didn't fire Brendan.
We build people up. We don't tear them down.
Yeah, we didn't.
That's what Twitch is for.
We didn't fire. We sacked them. We didn't fire Brendan. All right, here are the stories that we've been dying to get to. We just haven't. One thing that I am tired of hearing about, Blankers, because we're hearing a lot about these quarterbacks that are coming out in this draft, the good, the bad, what people like about them, what people don't like about them. I like Bryce Young a lot. I'd be very happy if he's the Houston Texans quarterback next year in 2023, although he is the betting favorite. He's minus money right now to go number one in the NFL draft, first round, April 27th, by the way. What I get tired of is hearing the arguments for and against certain players, because I think some of them are just stupid to not hold anything back. One of the things I'm tired of hearing about is that Bryce Young succeeded with a bad offensive coordinator. I know it's very easy to bang on Bill O'Brien. I hate that I have to vouch for Bill O'Brien. But Bill O'Brien's being courted by some NFL teams, and right now he's the odds-on favorite to be the offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots. Let's keep in mind that the Houston Texans had pretty good success with Bill O'Brien as the head coach. Yeah, you can make fun of a bad division. You could do, you know, they took advantage of a poor rivals in the conference. They won 9-7 division titles. I understand all that. I think it's fair to criticize O'Brien from that point of view. Bill O'Brien, relative to the offensive coordinator position in college, is a really good offensive coordinator. Nick Saban wanted Bill Belichick, Nick Saban wanted Bill O'Brien, and it looks like Bill Belichick want Bill O'Brien. I'm going to trust Nick Saban and Bill Belichick more than the average Joe that lives in Houston. I'm tired of hearing that Bryce Young succeeded with a bad offensive coordinator.
Look, he was an NFL experience coordinator that had worked with Tom Brady. I don't think that there's anything wrong with Bill's resume as an offensive coordinator. And as it relates to college game, when the players have to listen to him, sure, we saw in a lot of games, in particular ones played in the state of Texas too, where you could nitpick Bill O'Brien's offensive play calling. But we did that here. But that's what a lot of people do. But there's a reason why the man got another job after the debacle that he had here, because he wasn't judged just on his general manager duties. He wasn't judged as his head coach. He was judged as a guy that his background comes from being an offensive-minded head a coordinator. He's done fine. Alabama has to win football games as a unit and as a team, just like any other team in college football, and he's had a lot of success with Bryce Young. So, I mean, look, we know that there's a lot of people that have a lot of things to do, and especially when all they do is draft stuff, there's only so many things you can talk about, and these are the dicey, salacious things that people want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to like Bryce Young. There's some reasons to dislike Bryce Young. He succeeded with a bad offensive coordinator, I think, is such a bad, bad take, and I'm tired of hearing about it. All right, Lamar Jackson. This is one that we didn't get a chance to talk about because there's just so much football to get to these last couple of days. What were your thoughts on Lamar Jackson not being with the team in Cincinnati? Like, not playing is one thing, but to be nowhere around.
I didn't like it at all. And I think that he should own that. And that's a bad look for him. And that, as for all these teammates that are coming to his defense and saying, this is the guy that we need, with Lamar we would have won that game. Well, you should start by talking to Lamar about the fact that, look, I understand that you feel some kind of way about the way the organization has treated you and you don't have a contract yet, but I think you should also feel some kind of way the same way Sammy Watkins called him out and said that he should be playing. I think a lot of other teammates should call him out and say, you should have been with us, bro. Like, you may be mad at the organization, but if you're loyal to the guys that lace him up with you every single day and take that field and that practice field and go to war with you, then you should have our backs too, because this was a one-year scenario where we were all for one common goal, Maybe you can't play, but you can give me a whole lot of insight if you're Hundley. Maybe you can't play, but you can give me motivation if you're a player on offense or defense. You should have been with your squad, and that's a disappointment to me.
I thought it was a really bad look for him not to be there. I know that he has the contract dispute, all of that. They're paying him a decent amount of money this year. Not playing is one thing. I'm not going to sit there and say that Lamar Jackson should have been on the football field. They haven't tagged him yet.
Well, they can tag him for the first time.
Yeah, this can be. I expect them to tag Lamar Jackson.
Yep, I do too.
I don't expect him to be a Baltimore Raven, though.
You know, similar to Deshaun Watson. Instead of rap lyrics, you're doing quotes and you're giving all these different things of how, you know, you should have treated me better. We're not talking about, you know, divorce court here, but it sounds like it because you're acting like someone in a relationship scorned. Instead of someone that should have been the best teammate he could be in trying to be there for his teammates, even if he wasn't going to be on the field playing.
Yeah, I think that I don't think he plays for the Ravens next year. Where do you think Lamar Jackson plays?
That was a lot of people are saying the Jets.
That's a betting favorite if it's not Baltimore.
I can see why, because they feel like they're a quarterback away. I could see Brady with a sleeper being someone the Jets could at least get through the next year or two with, at least next year with. And have a solution there. But I think that I could see the Jets. I could see the Dolphins. If they move on from Tua, with as much as they're in go-for-it mode and how they were enamored with him and it had kicked the tires before and been intrigued, I could see the Dolphins being a destination.
Yeah, I think that I think it's going to be Atlanta.
It would be a good fit.
I think it's going to be Atlanta. You put him there.
A lot of talent around him.
The alligator running back. They have Kyle Pitts. I think that you have Drake London there
London
as well.
There for sure.
I think it'd be a really good fit. And plus you have the coach there that came from Tennessee who kind of has like a run first mentality. I think Lamar Jackson would be a perfect fit in Atlanta. 7926 says O'Brien has never had a top five offense. Okay, that's the qualifier for a dude to be a good play caller offensively, is that he needs a top five offense in the NFL to be a good play caller in college football.
If you've got a good defense, you don't have to be a top five offense because you don't have to outscore everybody that you play by putting up gaudy numbers. Your defense is going to keep you in ball games and possibly win you games. Just don't lose it.
That's the biggest straw man I've ever seen in my life. Nathaniel Hackett. The Jets are interviewing him. This is your guy, Nathaniel Hackett. The Jets are meeting with Nathaniel Hackett for their offensive coordinator position. Of course, they fired LaFleur. They're looking for a new OC. You don't hate Hackett, right, as an offensive coordinator?
I don't hate him, but I'm not enthralled with him because he hasn't impressed me because he never called the plays. I mean, you can be in
That's
the
good
room.
Point.
You can be in the room. And by the way, he wasn't second fiddle either. He was third. Because Aaron Rodgers called the plays after Matt LaFleur called the plays. So to be the third fiddle and then all of a sudden be the play caller and the head coach, it was too much for him to handle in Denver. Could he be a good offensive coordinator? I think he's got possibilities, but I wouldn't even be sold on that because of the fact that for the last, what have you done for me lately, the last couple of years that I've seen, he hasn't called any plays.
I feel like people are overthinking this a little bit. Like, because of what you just said, because of how bad it was in Denver, why would you bring in Nathaniel Hackett? Like, there's got to be some offensive
Especially
coordinators
in
out
New
there.
York, where you're going to be scrutinized anyway, right. But it's so hyper-important you get this right. You moved on from LaFleur's little brother because he was the scapegoat for bad quarterback play, and now this is going to be your answer?
I wouldn't touch Hackett with a 10-foot pole. The Panthers planning to interview. This is another one. Remember, you were talking about earlier in the show, the Texans maybe should look at adding some more names to this coaching interview list, some offensive minds. Here's one that we didn't talk about that I'd be intrigued with. Panthers to interview Bills offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey on Saturday for the head coaching job. If he interviewed for the Houston Texans, I'd be pleased with that.
I would too.
Play caller, the offensive mind. McDermott is a defensive-minded head coach.
Dable.
So you know that Ken Dorsey's the brains.
He
worked with Dable. And this is his first year play calling because Dable's gone. So there is some risk
and
there.
He's got passion.
It's only his first year. He's got
he
some
likes
passion.
To beat up electronics when
There's
things
no doubt
don't go
about
his way.
That. Ken Dorsey, if the Texans interviewed Ken Dorsey, I'm not going to go as far. I would need to do a little bit of prep on this to say if I'm willing to go as far as Steichen or Kafka, that I like him more than those guys. But I promise you I like him more than Jonathan Gannon.
He'd be in the conversation for me. He'd be because he's an offensive mind, which I said I got to have.
Yep.
He's an ex-quarterback, and he's learned under some good people. I would have him in the conversation of being intrigued and interested, and definitely more than Jonathan Gannon. Played quarterback at the U, and then he played for the Niners.
When he was 38, I think. Yeah, he played the quarterback there.
Maybe. And he played for the Niners and other teams in the NFL.
Yeah, he was one of those old quarterbacks.
Was he?
Yeah, he was one of those old quarterbacks, which, hey, maybe that's a good thing. We were talking earlier about, like, coaches plus the 12th pick or Sean Payton. Ken Dorsey and the 12th pick or Sean Payton.
Ken Dorsey in the 12th pick.
Me too. Ken Dorsey, Cleveland's 2024 first rounder, or Sean Payton.
tougher.
There's
but,
the line right there. We yeah. just found the line.
Yeah, the 24th, that pick next year, I'm not as enamored with, that I might take Sean Payton because of the stability.
That was the line. We just found it. I'll go Ken Dorsey there.
Okay.
I'll go Ken Dorsey over that. We'll end, in case we missed it, with some good news where Lamar Jackson can't bother to show up for a playoff game on the sideline. DeMar Hamlin reportedly has been with the team nearly every day. At the Bills facility. Awesome to see the recovery of this. It was so scary in the moment. We didn't think he was going to make it. And fast forward a couple of weeks, and seems like he's living a very normal life again, which is awesome.
Fantastic. And like I said, it has nothing to do with him playing football again. That would just be the overall icing on the cake. The fact that he's alive and that he has all of his functions and his mind about him, and that he's living his life on a daily basis, that's the best-case scenario for everyone and anyone. Because to be honest with you, Jeremy, after watching the end of that Buccaneers-Cowboys game, I don't think anyone that watched that night between the Bengals and the Bills will have the same feeling ever again when they see an ambulance or a cart or a board on the field. It changed everything going forward for every sports fan, and it was scary.
Yeah, that was a scary moment. Gage, he's tweeted out that he's doing all right. It looked to me like he was trying to get up. And just couldn't.
Didn't have
the motor skills to do so.
And I saw his feet and his arms move, but that started to worry me about, is it a spinal injury where he has a back, like a broken bone in his back or something, where he couldn't get his midsection. But as long as he's going to recover fully too, that's great. But just the minute it happened and the scene on the field, I darted right back to the Bills-Bengals game, and it was not a good feeling.
Yeah, it was a weird moment. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's talk some basketball in this city. We'll leave with the best basketball in this city, but also we'll get to some of this John Wall and what he had to say about the Houston Rockets organization. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Cougars win basketball last night in New Orleans. Number one team in the country.
By 20.
20-point win over Tulane. It was a game for first place. Cougars were 5-0. Tulane was 5-1. Whoever wins that game's in first place. First sellout at the... What do they call it again? They call it the Fogelman Arena at the Devlin Fieldhouse, which explained that to me. Well, how is the arena inside the Fieldhouse? But whatever.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is a mouthful. Houston goes into New Orleans, sold out crowd, first sold out crowd they've had in New Orleans at that building since like 1993. And good crowd, good environment. Students were overall all on top of me. But Houston wins by 20, 80-60, and the best basketball team in the city has now won 9 in a row.
Did you see the video that you posted?
Yes.
I asked that seriously. Did you preview it?
I don't know.
Or did
not
you
really.
Do that intentionally before you? Did you realize what the dude was doing behind you?
No, I didn't.
You need to look at it again.
What is he doing?
See? You didn't preview. You need to look at it again. That's all I'm going to tell you.
I didn't. Was it something inappropriate?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, well. I mean, it's
and
only I on my Instagram.
I thought your face was appropriate because I thought you realized it. Now that you didn't, it's even better.
No,
go
I didn't.
Go back and look at it.
I didn't preview the fans.
Okay. Yeah, go look at
it. No. I was just seeing if it was a good shot on me. That's all I was worried about. What was he doing?
Adjusting.
Oh, really? Yeah. Was he looking at the camera?
I don't think so.
That's hilarious. But I saw that Kit Hoffman posted this on SportsMap the other day. He wrote a story about how everybody in this city needs to be talking about the Cougars. They shouldn't be buried behind all the pro teams. You know, the Rockets don't deserve more attention than the Houston Cougars. And, I mean, obviously, I would agree. This is a really good basketball team. A lot of times in this city, we only pay attention to college basketball in March. Now, I would argue, push back on that a little bit. Every single game at Fertitta Center has been sold out. But this is, we've been saying the same stuff all year. An incredibly fun team to watch. They're going to get after you defensively. The effort's always going to be there. It's a blue-collar team, and they have tons of talent. There's a reason they're number one in the country. And Marcus Sasser's been outstanding these last two games, playing like a preseason All-American.
You don't have to tell the X that, because the X is going to get you.
Oh, you're talking about Dez?
Dez Bryant all over the Cougs last night on Twitter.
I saw that. Yeah
he's showing a lot of love for Sasser and for the team.
You know what's impressive about that, though? is that game was on Plus.
I couldn't find it. I was almost going to text you because I wanted to bother you.
Yeah.
But I'm going, someone was quoting something that someone on ESPN had said, and I was like, well, you're not listening to my boy Brandon, which is a mistake, but wait a minute.
Yeah.
I want to watch that game, and I couldn't find it.
That's the impressive, like, Dez didn't just put it on ESPN and watch himself some college basketball. He seeked out Houston on ESPN Plus.
I literally scanned every sports channel on DirecTV and was like, okay, it pisses me off. It's just on Plus.
Yeah, kind of weird that they
it's a better game than some of the games they put on last night.
Number one team in the country on Plus. Kind of interesting. John Wall had some things to say yesterday. I guess it wasn't yesterday, but it kind of leaked out yesterday. One of the things that I kind of took away from this, and we'll get to some of the sound bites here in a little bit as well.
Yep.
I don't want to cry over spilt milk. Like, we know that John Wall was sent home. We know that John Wall refused to just automatically accept a bench role and that he wanted somebody to earn it. But I think that there's some key takeaways in this audio that we're about to play that isn't about the past, and it's very much about where the organization's at currently and going forward. I would also say there's two sides to a story.
Sure.
Like, John Wall giving his side of the story here, that's fine. There's always the second side. And apparently in this podcast, didn't listen to the full podcast, he was talking too about some college days, about Kentucky, about North Carolina, and Tyler Hansborough, Psycho T, I saw him tweet earlier today, said what John Wall said is absolutely not true. So apparently there's some of the other stuff that Psycho T is putting John Wall, kind of checking him, saying, well, what you're saying is not totally true with this. Let's start with John Wall with the young players, though. Talking about how the young players on this team doing things in Houston that they probably wouldn't get away with elsewhere.
I was just being a professional.
Yeah.
Like, I always wanted to teach them, like, don't get used to this shit. It's not how the NBA is.
Right.
Like, it's just a bad organization right now. Mm-hmm. Like, they got to fix some shit around. But, like, I always talked to Jalen Green, Kevin Porter, KJ. I'm like, yo, don't get adjusted to this losing shit. It's not how the league is. But at the same time, I had to tell them, like, this shit y'all getting away with over here, you go to any other teams, you'd be out the league.
You'd be
like, you wouldn't play.
You're not playing.
I wouldn't play.
No, facts.
So I'm trying to explain that to them because they think it's sweet. And I'm like, if you ever get traded and go somewhere else, you're going to be like, this motherfucker was right.
All right, so what he said there, I saw some people on Twitter kind of going back and forth on what exactly he was talking about, whether it was on the floor, whether it's off the floor,
it's a combination
whether
of
it's both. You think it's a combo of both?
I think it's a combination of both. And look, again, I know too much in a lot of cases, and a lot of people came at me when I started this entire notion and setting the tone for you with how it relates to Rafael Stone and the organization. And everybody said I was just a hater and I was bitter and I was this. Well, this is the first of what I think may open a door in which you get a little bit more insight and depth into what I had mentioned years ago as to what's going on in this franchise. I think it's one thing to say that you got the young players to where we said, look, and I said all along, there's always been parallels between the Texans and the Rockets. The ownership, the first-time general managers, the way that their coaching searches have gone, and the coaches and the job they were doing, and so much more. But part of it is, we said the Texans were behind the Rockets because they had the key players in place already the Texans didn't have. But if those key players run amok, and I think just as it relates to on the floor, we talk about it all the time. The ISO, ISO, ISO. The fact that you know you're not going to get punished if you take a bad shot. You're not going to sit down if you take three or four really ill-advised and bad decision shots. Every other team in the league with the coaching staff that they have and the way that they're run would sit those guys. But when you don't get punished for it, there's nothing that says, I need to stop doing what I've been doing. I need to maybe do more. And that's where we can talk about it from a basketball perspective.
I think that it was both, too. That was my takeaway, is that it's both on and off the floor. And some people are like, well, he should have said exactly what he was talking about. Well, remember what happened last year at halftime when Kevin Porter Jr.
And there's so much more to that than that.
Right. But what do we know publicly about that?
You let Christian Wood, one, on the same night that KPJ did what he did, you let Christian Wood have a coach go out and put his somewhat to his butt on the line to basically lie for him and say that he had some things going on with health issues. That's why he didn't start that night. He played awful in the first half. The coach after the game, after he put him in to start the second half, he refused to go in. He had a tantrum. After the game, he tore everything up and had another tantrum and said, I'll never play with you MFers again, and stormed out of the locker room. And Silas covered him again and in the press conference said, look, it was about a bum ankle or something else, but it wasn't about that. And then the truth came out. And you know what you did? You suspended him because you felt like you had too much pressure from the media for one game. That's a guy that should have been sent packing and never asked to come back again, or at the very least, been suspended for quite a while to let him think about his actions and let him know we don't deal with that kind of stuff around here. But when you let him get off easy, it set a tone for all the young kids and everything else going forward that, you know what, that's not only accepted, that could happen again.
And even if that's just the tip of the iceberg, right? Like, even if that's the only thing.
Right.
That's not great.
And not at all.
I think that's one example.
And on the same night, your young player went off and did a whole lot more, and he got a game too.
And I think that's one example of what John Wall could potentially be talking about with the off-the-floor stuff. Yep. I think the off-the-floor stuff, it's easy to make that case. Like, the off-the-floor stuff, I think, is easy to see what John Wall could potentially
Rafael
be talking
Stone,
about here.
By the way, loves KPJ because it's one of the moves that he's personally made that that has worked out really well. He gave up basically nothing to Cleveland to get this kid.
Yeah.
So that's one of his guys.
I mean, they were going to waive him. They were going to waive him.
And so he wants that to be a success story no matter what. And he is hyper-protective of KPJ.
I can understand that. Like, I mean, we see that, I think, a lot in sports, right? Where if you take a dude in the first round, you're going to be very protective of that dude. Like, you fall in love with a guy and you want to protect that guy. But I think that's what John Wall could potentially be talking about with the off-the-floor stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's only what came to the public eye.
That's
so
right.
If that's one thing that came to the public eye, there's probably a series of other things
so much more
that also went on.
Yep.
But on the floor, I think you talked about it as well, whether it's just effort defensively, whether it's how about effort rebounding, how about maybe a little bit of effort on the offensive side of the floor instead of just playing a bunch of ISO ball. Like, I think there's things that you can watch if you watch this team night in, night out that you look at. And look, I don't think Jalen Green's going to get cut if he doesn't get back on defense one time. But it's one of those things where if it happens a series of times, he's not going to play 35 minutes a game. Like,
right.
there doesn't seem to be, like, one game suspension, very light for the off-the-court stuff. The on-the-court stuff, like, outside of Alpi Shingun, who only, gets 20, 25 minutes a game, Jalen Green's going to play 35 minutes no matter what. If Jalen Green gives zero effort defensively, he's going to play 35 minutes.
Right.
If Kevin Porter Jr. doesn't give you any effort defensively, and he doesn't run with the offense, I mean, if they have an offense and wants them to do, he's going to get 35 minutes. So there's nothing punitive currently with this team, whether it's off the floor or it's on the floor.
And if you don't learn, you're not going to change the behavior. So if no one's going to be able to say, hey, if you didn't get back on defense, or if you took three bad shots or a bad shot when we didn't need it, and you didn't get reprimanded for it or at least talked to about it, nothing tells you that there's any kind of ramifications to where you're not going to do it again. And like I said, and do it more. And that's where you don't have to be Tom Thibodeau or Greg Popovich. But if you are any kind of coach that has any kind of stones, no pun intended, you're going to be the guy that says to him, you're not doing that. And we're not doing that here. And you're going to sit until you realize that the more you do it, the more you're going to sit, no matter how many minutes you expect to play per night, and no one is checking or policing anyone.
There's a comparison that Blankers is making between the Rockets and the Texans. Another soundbite we want to get to with John Wall as well. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, I want to tell you that Frankie's Italian Kitchen in the new, bigger, better location is now open, and they are cooking. Literally. And the food is unbelievable yet again. Chris has done it. He's not only the owner, he is the chef. And when he makes food, you need to be there because everything that they cook there is made from scratch. It is fresh. It is delicious. And you can go up and down the menu and all the specials, and you are not going to be disappointed because you are going to leave full and happy, and you know that is going to be one of the best meals you've had in a long time because they take care of you every step of the way. The food is the most important thing. The atmosphere is as well. Because it's a place for your friends or your family. You can spread out. You can relax. You can feel like you're at home. And you don't have to worry about which fork you use and how hoity-toity the restaurant is. The bar's unbelievable now, too. 8 big-screen TVs to watch all the sports. It's Dino's Bar, named after Dean Martin. They want you to enjoy your beverages and enjoy the company you keep as well. It's all fantastic. It's a mile away from the old location, so it's right nearby. It's right off 99, within a mile of Highway 99, as you get into that Richmond Katy, Sugarland area, Fulcher. It's right there. 99 and you turn on 1093. It's on the north side between Spring Green and FM 1463. And it is double the size, but it's the same kind of food. And that's what will get you coming back again and again. I went off the straight Italian and I went to the chicken marsala. My daughter had pizza. My other daughter had pasta. All of them were delicious. Believe me, I tried them all. You can too. Check them out, and what you didn't order this time, you'll be back to check out and order the next time because that's how good the food is. Tell them I sent you by. It's Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
John Belmer bringing some heat, making his presence known on the Killer Bees this afternoon. Lamont says, how is it possible for no one in the media to report on the Rockets players' behavior, but John Wall did? If these are entitled and messed up, how John described it, it'd be impossible for the local media not to notice that.
Not true.
The we did know about the altercation at halftime when a Rockets player left an NBA game at the half. Like, think about that for a second. A player on the Rockets last year left the building at halftime of an NBA game.
Yeah, and there was a lot more to it than that. And that's why it is very possibly, entirely possible, if you play your cards right, you can keep a ton. Look, for all my years in the NBA, I can tell you just right off the top of my head of five or six stories that no one still to this day knows about, that we knew about, that we covered up. It can be done. That's not the issue. The issue is it's done a lot easier with a lot of veterans. It's done a lot easier with the right management. But it doesn't mean that it didn't happen. And now when you're talking about how it influences the rest of the players in the locker room and the kind of ripple effect that it's going to have, it doesn't matter if the media finds out about it or not. If it affects the guys that you're trying to develop and the culture that you use in your locker room and practices on and planes on a daily basis, it's going to be a negative and it's going to stick around and be long-lasting until a change or changes are made. And that's what I don't think enough people are realizing. It doesn't matter if anybody in the media found out.
Where the Rockets are right now in this build, like, you're still very much in the building talent, collecting talent, and then developing that talent stage. So the winning of the games isn't something that really bothers me a whole lot.
No, not at all. That's why I want Silas to finish the year.
Right. But you do need to develop talent. The fear that I have, and, like, even if you fire Silas right now, the rest of the coaching staff is the same. So, like, the people that you have in place currently that are supposed to be developing the talent are going to be the people you have in place if you move on from Silas in the middle of the season to still develop the talent. So there's really nothing that you're gaining by firing Silas other than, like, we mean it now. It's kind of like this false, tough guy, look, we care, so we're going to fire Silas. Like, it doesn't really matter. You're not trying to win games. You're trying to develop players. The guys that are going to be here that replace Silas are still going to be the guys that are currently here to develop those players as well.
And also, if you can continue, if you continue to run your ship the way Rafael Stone is running his ship, one, no one's going to want a coach here, but the next coach that comes here is going to deal with the same things. Now, Silas isn't speaking a whole lot because this was his first opportunity. Again, when I say all the parallels, you got a guy like David Culley in Stephen Silas. Great dude, but guess what? Paid all his dues, did all this time in the league, got his first coaching opportunity. You're going to rock the boat? You're going to tattle on people in the front office? You're going to tell people that my hands are tied, they're not letting me do the things that I need to do to be a head coach? Uh-huh. Hell no, because just like we heard Howard Balzer say in the NFL, you want your next job. You don't want this to be your last and only job, and so you can't be the guy that goes out and uses the media as a pawn to try and get your way.
Yeah, here's the second part of the Wall conversation I wanted to get to. This was the conversation that I think it's Silas. He says a coach calling him and asking him basically if he'd be willing to come off the bench.
I go back to check on my condo a month before the season. They call. They're like, yo, come in the office. This is coach talking. He's like, yo, how would you feel come off the bench? I said, for who? No offense, but who? I'm your best player last year. Like, this is what the GM wants. This is what you want. I mean, he wants you to play 10, 15 minutes a game. Sometimes don't play. I said, I'm not doing that. Either you're going to guarantee me some minutes.
Right.
I'm not, but I'm like, let him earn a spot.
Not facts.
And the coach, he was like, man, you don't deserve that. Like, you should be a starter. Like, you don't. But he's like, this is what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, I'm not doing that. I said, I'll rehab. I'll work out every day. I'll stick around the team, come to meetings, fly with y'all, mentor the guys.
All right, the part that I want to focus on there, because I don't care that he got benched. I don't care that he got sent away from the team. Like, that's old conversation. That's old stuff. Does it bother you that the general manager's picking the starting lineup in the minutes?
Immensely. It bothers me immensely. And he goes on later to talk about a guy named Patton that was thrown into the starting lineup because they wanted to lose. And they Their focus was on losing. But the thing that everybody's saying when they say John Wall is bitter, and look, I've dealt with this, but I heard things too. When John Wall says the things that he's saying, he's not a – most veterans at that point in their career would take the money and run and say, you mean I get a year's vacation where I can go and just roll and do whatever I want to do and collect that check? Bye. But he was so passionate about getting on the court that he was pissed off he wasn't starting, that he was pissed off he wasn't being allowed to practice with the team, that he was pissed off that for no apparently good reason, he was being told to go away or sit down or do something a different way. And that's why there's validity there. That's what I don't like. And that's what I've been telling you about. That's when I say that Silas can't coach because his hands are tied. It's because Rafael Stone is the guy that is keeping Stephen Silas from being able to coach that he thought he was going to be able to be when he took over a team that he didn't get to coach, James Harden and Russell Westbrook. The reason why Russ wanted out was because not because of Stephen Silas. It was because he knew the guy that he couldn't stand was now going to be promoted to general manager. James Harden the same way. James Harden, Tillman wants James Harden. James Harden would like to come back. I've heard from people, James Harden won't come back if that guy's the general manager. So these are the kind of things that we're getting into now that may start to press a button or two where more stories are going to come out. Because this is the kind of thing where you're setting yourself out to be the clown show of the NBA and parallel with the Houston Texans. And you don't want that.
I think that this could be, like, it's... I also don't want the general manager tinkering with the starting lineup and the minutes.
Like, I don't either.
I feel the general manager needs to collect the talent. And then if you want to have those conversations, you have those conversations. Like, hey, we think that the best interest of this team and the future of our team is that Wall comes off the bench. Here's what I think the minute distribution should be. But ultimately, I think that that final decision comes to the head coach. The head coach should be the one making that call. So I'm okay with the conversation happening. Like, I'm okay with GM and Dusty talking about what the normal lineup is going to be, but then Dusty has the final say. Like, that's how I think a good working relationship should work when it comes to general manager, head coach, and you're talking about either minutes in this case or at-bats in the Dusty Baker case. Now, I would say that I think this can be fixed. I don't think this has to be a permanent problem. And I would also argue that if this is going on right now, it doesn't matter a whole lot. Again, it comes down to the winning. The Rockets aren't in a position to win right now, so it doesn't matter a whole lot that this is happening currently.
And I said, excuse me, but I said Silver doesn't he doesn't take lightly to tanking this year. You don't have to tank if you keep Silas till the end of the year and everything handles its own self.
What can Silver do? Like, that to me is an empty threat.
He can try and put his foot down. Look, he's tried.
But there's no rule currently with it. That's a lawsuit.
Right, you're right. But at the same time, again, you don't have to worry about being in that discussion if you just keep doing what you're doing.
Right, they're gonna do it by default. We agree on that. Now, this doesn't have to be a permanent issue. This can be a temporary thing for 1 or 2 years. But what has to happen, if Stone is still the general manager of this team, is that you have to, and I hesitate to say that this is the likeliness of happening, because I don't know if a guy that has that much power would be willing to sacrifice that power, much like we thought with Caserio and whoever he hires as head coaches. This can be fixed, but in order to fix it, you have to go out and find that head coach who is the total authority of the organization.
You need the Sean Payton as he is to the Texans coaching search.
And maybe not that far. Like, maybe he's not making the trades. Maybe he's not making the draft picks. But
the loudest voice in the room.
Exactly. The moment that you walk into his office, it's the coach that's commanding the presence, not the general manager. Or the coach is saying that, hey, we think it's in the best interest of this guy to come off the bench. Uh-uh. I'm the coach of this team. I know how to handle this team. This guy's going to be starting. You have to find somebody like that if you're really interested in fixing it. Now, the question will be this offseason if Rafael Stone is that interested in fixing it. Because if he is that interested in fixing it, he's going to go hire a head coach like that. A veteran dude that's going to have to be the voice in the room, to use your words. If he's not interested in fixing it, he's just going to find the next Stephen Silas.
He likes being the puppeteer. Mm-hmm. He likes having everybody under his reign. This is a guy that in front of the media sometimes, he's not bashful about stopping a coach talking to a player one-on-one and giving him instruction and interrupting to say what he wants. He does the same thing. He completely stifles Silas as a head coach. And it happens over and over again. And I got sources that tell me things all the time. And it's mesmerizing to the guys around the league. And you look at the reputation around the league. I've had people in the front office of the NBA tell me he alienated and pissed off half of the general managers in the league within 60 days. And now most of the people in the league feel the same way. Like, what's going on?
Jeff Luno did that too, though. Like, true. I don't think it's a prerequisite to have
success.
Jeff
Luno had a lot more success stories so that you had to respect his ability to do his job.
Not when he made him mad. That came later. It came later with Luno.
Okay. But again, when you start also having a resume that starts building and you start doing some of the things, that people have a tendency to deal with it a little bit more.
I can overlook all of that if ultimately they win in 3 years.
Agents are out there calling it a clown, calling this the clown show of the NBA.
That might be the biggest
thing. That's scary
negative.
When you need to attract free agents that want to be here. You tell teams in the past when Eric Gordon shouldn't be on this roster anymore, that's a neat offer, and we'll maybe come back to you. Let me see what else I can get. Nothing turns a general manager off than telling me, yeah, that's good, not great. We might come back to you.
Yeah.
Screw you. Then I'll find somebody else or I won't do anything, but I'm not dealing with you. And that's the bigger issue, is the fact that you have veteran players on other teams that are telling you what should be done with your franchise, what you should be working on with these young players. Şengün should be getting more tutelage. If he can't play defense right now, make sure he can, because he's your best weapon and he's your smartest basketball player right now, the way he runs the offense, and he actually wants to run an offense. He doesn't run ISOs on the wing for 19 seconds like we saw too much when Harden was at least good at scoring the basketball. But now you've got two or three guys that do that, and you need to reel it in and figure out, hey, there's a time for that, but there's another time where we got to run structured offense and play defense, and they don't do any of that.
You got to find a coach who is the ultimate basketball boy. He doesn't even have to be making the roster moves. But with the roster that you give him, he's deciding who's starting. He's deciding the minutes. He's keeping the front office out of the locker room. He's developing the players through film session. If they're sensitive, that's part of getting better as a young player. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blakers got into a little bit of some of the comparisons you see with the Rockets and the Texans. How about the Rafael Stone comparison? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7, that's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Someone texting in 7869, is Quinn Snyder the type of guy that
top of my list?
Make out his own. It's not even just a lineup thing, because he says make out his own lineup. I think that the way you kind of described it's the perfect way. He is the ultimate basketball voice. He's the one that's deciding everything from a basketball point of view. Maybe Stone can still – and I still want a general manager that is building the team, acquiring the talent, making the trades, making the draft picks. But that dude in the head coaching chair should not be bothered. He has total reign over every basketball decision that happens on the
floor. Practices, plane rides, games.
Film,
all of it. And that has to happen. Now, could it happen? Could you pull a Casario and kind of do a look in the mirror and a hard 180? Yeah. Sure you could.
You could.
But the time is running out, and you better start doing it. Otherwise, you're not going to get the coach that your organization needs. You're going to get the one that you need so that you save your ass.
And there's some comparisons with this current Texans coaching cycle. Nick Casario needing to put his pride aside. That's why Sean Payton appears to be like one of the front runners for the job, or at least one of the targets that the Texans have. Same thing with like a D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans isn't going to take a backseat to Nick Casario. Similarities there as well with the Rockets. Like, they need that type of coach, and they need to make that type of decision to let everybody know that they're going to be serious.
That's right.
And they're giving that power to the head coach. You kind of made the comparison with Silas and Cully a little bit. You think there's an apples-to-apples comparison with Stone and anybody that had been involved in the Texans organization?
Rafael Stone is the Houston sports equivalent of Jack Easterby, and it's getting to be the point where it's the NBA's version of Jack Easterby, only this time it has the ramifications that it's basically Jack Easterby 2.0, because Jack Easterby came in with no credibility. He came in as a team chaplain. Okay, Rafael Stone came in as the team legal counsel, who I worked with, who followed Daryl Morey around as his shadow for a year, but more importantly, saw the ownership change, knew and made the inroads he had to make to befriend Tillman Fertitta or get as close to him as he could, then made the even smarter decision. When you talk about the way Easterby played the situation and continued to play it in his favor, Rafael's done the same thing. He played the Fertittas to befriend Patrick Fertitta, his son, because Tillman had Patrick earmarked to have a major role in the franchise going forward. Rafael knew that his long-term status with the franchise was up in the air the minute the team was sold. Les owed him some things. Les was going to take care of him. He didn't know about Tillman. So wisely, he connected his wagon as quickly as he could to Tillman, but at the same time, kept saying to him, hey, look, I know what Daryl knows. I know everything that Daryl does. So when Daryl and Tillman had a falling out, hey, I can be your cheap solution. Let me have my dream job, and whatever you pay me is going to be the biggest salary that I could imagine right now, but I get to be a general manager in the NBA with no credibility. And that's how Jack got to be vice president of football. You befriend the ownership. You get to a point where no one could ever fathom that someone could get to without many steps along the way paying dues. And suddenly you're in complete control of basketball operations. As long as you nurture the kid along, you're supposed to be protected and be the guy that gets the keys to the car on a daily basis. And then you take advantage of it by not only being in with the keys, but telling your coach how to coach, telling everyone in basketball how you need it done. What gives anybody the ability to say, oh, he knows what he's talking about. I'm following that lead.
Yeah. OG says Silas equals Cully. Rafael ain't got no choice but to intervene.
OG is completely off his rocker in a lot of ways. So, I mean, that
name one way he's off his rocker.
This just proved it. Twitch. Just
I want to know one
Twitch.
Way that he's off his rocker.
He has been the biggest blocker for Rafael Stone since day one. And look, I don't think this is the end of this. But John Wall had nothing to gain by doing this. And John Wall told you he wanted to play. Most guys that got that kind of money would just walk away and go, I'm cool, and I'm still going to find somewhere to find a job. But if you're going to pay me $40 million to walk away, I don't need to get up early and work out. I don't want to be there with my team, and I don't want to play babysitter to these kids. But instead, he wanted to and was told not to. He wanted to start and wasn't allowed to. So there's no credibility there?
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line for John. John, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, John?
Oh, man, what's up, man? So I've been watching the Rockets lately, and, you know, I feel like there's a glaring lack of veteran
sure.
Experience on the team,
yep.
And they just don't have any leadership.
Appreciate the call, John.
You're not wrong.
It's a very good take. The counterpoint that I would have to that, and look, it's not I'm not disagreeing. I just don't think it matters yet. I don't think that matters yet. I don't think it matters yet that they have, like, the right coach in place. In fact, this coach should be more about player development
than winning
games.
This is the bridge, like we talked about with the Texans. This is what you wanted Cully to be for a two-year span.
The problem with that, though, is, like, if you have a head coach that's not very good at developing players, then I think that can potentially stunt your growth as an organization. Like, Cully and Lovey and Pep Hamilton, if you want to throw them into that mix as well, I don't think that they are the best at developing players. And I think that has a chance to stunt the growth of the organization and slow down like what you're hoping would be a rapid rebuild. I would say the same thing right now. Like you're not seeing a ton of development from a Jalen Green. Shingun has looked better. You're not seeing a whole lot of development from a Kevin Porter Jr., Jabari. Like, I think Jabari's played a little bit better, but I think that's more because he's a rookie that's starting to figure out life in the NBA than it is like being
coached
up.
His dad helps a lot.
Yeah,
because he taught him how to be a pro.
So like that to me is more of the issue with the coaching position of those two similar organizations, Texans, Rockets, than it is about winning games. Because I don't really care that there aren't veterans on this team right now. Like Eric Gordon's a veteran on this team. We're saying that he
doesn't
want to
be
down. And in that. And that matters as well. But the timing for all of that, to me, comes into place next year.
We talked about
And that's
this.
How we're going to find out if the Houston Rockets are putting winning as their priority.
Because it is imperative this year that you do lose as many games as possible, because as the last year you control your pick,
right.
Those top two kids at those kids at the top of the draft are difference makers. But you're screwing up difference makers right now. Jalen Green could be the NBA's glaring example of Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold. If he's not coached appropriately and he is not groomed along the way from maturity and developmental ability to be able to capitalize on his skills, he's not getting that. Kevin Porter leads the league in turnovers. Jalen Green is getting his points, but he's getting his points by shooting awful shots and shooting a horrible percentage. Şengün is a guy that, as much as he needs work on the defensive end, he's getting better as your team gets worse. These are the guys that need to be getting coached up on a daily basis, because it's not about this year, but it's about the next 3 to 5 years when you want to make a push for the playoffs, when if they don't get developed correctly, they're not going to know how to do what you want them to do for whoever's coaching right. This team.
Maybe this is me being over, like, way too optimistic, and maybe it's because I'm searching for some good news on the day that Benny Johnson has taken his name out of the coaching search for the Houston Texans, at least the day after, and that's still very sad to
yes.
me. I'm still very, very depressed over Benny Johnson being off the Texans coaching list. I'm not so sure that this is a bad thing for the Rockets. Like, certainly it's not a good look. The agent saying it's a clown show, John Wall questioning the organization, all of those things. But I do think it's a positive that it's coming to light. Because if it comes to light, like now you...
Not too late to fix it.
Right. You don't, and you're still like January 18th. We have the summer to talk about when the offseason comes. So like it makes it, in my mind, a higher probability that there would be change in place because more and more stuff is coming out. Look, Tillman Fertitta is a winner, right? Like Tillman Fertitta is one in life. He's one in his businesses. As the, you know, regent head at the, you know, U of H, he makes some things happen there that are very much the betterment of the university and the athletic department. I ultimately think he's going to win with the Houston Rockets, and he's desperate to win with the Houston Rockets, and I believe he's going to be a very good owner for the Houston Rockets. Tillman Fertitta sees all this stuff. That ticks him off. That doesn't make him happy. So this stuff coming to light and becoming obvious to everybody, I think increases the likelihood that Tillman's going to be like, all right, I got to get this thing right. And that doesn't mean firing Rafael Stone. I think Rafael Stone can be the general manager of this team and the Rockets have success. But this offseason's critical to find the guy that's going to be the head coach of this organization that's going to be one that you give the power to that we've been talking about, the voice in the room, and then you give him the resources to be able to accomplish all of that, that you make sure that he has everything in his power and you get out of the way to let him accomplish that. He needs to be a dude. He needs to be a dude that can develop young players, and he needs to be a dude that is going to get the attention of the young players and play his way. And you're not telling, and that coach has the power. So where if Jalen Green's mad at that coach, he's like, well, I want this guy out of here. No, you got to draw your line in the sand, and that coach needs to be able to reign supreme.
Silas was the wrong guy for the job, but I don't think he was hired for the job. He was hired for a veteran-laden team. So you can use him as your bridge the way the Texans used Cully and then Lovie. And now as the team's ready to develop, no matter who you get in the draft and how you finish the season, when you move on from Silas, the next guy has to be a guy. He has to be a guy with a resume. He has to be a guy that young guys can respect, that old guys can respect. And then you start doing what we've said he has to do. He has to get a couple veterans that want to be there, that don't mind helping teach the young kids how to deal with the NBA life and mature and make the right decisions and execute plays, but also still can help you in your rotation to be a better basketball team. And then you got to realize that these guys that fight about their minutes and their shots and how much run they're getting on SportsCenter, if you add a Wembanyama and you're that lucky, or a Scoot, and suddenly these guys got to take a step back, but yet you've done nothing but push them forward no matter what their shortcomings are to say you're the man, how are they going to deal with that? The only way they're going to deal with that is if you have a veteran coach that says, you either do it my way and understand what we're doing here, or we'll find a new home for you.
5619. Blankers, you said that Wall was a bad influence. Have you changed your mind after garnering more information? Not arguing. Heck, I flip all the time.
I don't think that he was a bad influence. I think that there were times when he wanted to be the right influence, but I think that he was influenced by the way he was being treated too, and that's when he started to act up even more because he knew he wasn't getting a chance to play when he had a lot to prove too that he could still play for the next team that he would end up playing for.
And somebody else said, yeah, why would you start John Wall? That's stupid, which is true. And look, this is one side of the story. I think it's a positive that it's all coming to light. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks for John Belmer filling in, doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.